Hello, my name is Samuel George London, and welcome to Comics for the Apocalypse. Today's return guest is comic book writer and totally down-to-earth dude, Alan Dunford. The format is still largely the same, but instead of chatting about comics for the apocalypse, I'll be asking my guest about what comics they've been reading recently. But before we get into it, I'd like to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, the Comic Scene Comic Club. Available from just £5 a month or £30 a year, you can get monthly issues of The History of Comics, Shift, Brawler, and specials of Pat Mills' Space Warp. To find out more and subscribe to the Comic Club, visit comicscene.org. Now, without further ado, on with the show. Hello, Alan Dunford. How's it going?
Oh, Sam, how are you?
I'm not too bad, not too bad. I was just saying that I've had an absolutely hectic day on the work front, but through it now.
Well,
I'm going to have just as busy day tomorrow, though. So I've got to get my 40 winks later, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of some stuff for between Sam and I. You know, we almost had to push the interview back because I almost had some work stuff come up too, but hey, we're perfect, yeah. Now.
Exactly, it all worked out in the end, didn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, no, it's a real pleasure to have you back on the show, man. It's absolutely fantastic, because you're doing a follow-up to your Pocus Hocus series. But before we get into that, just for those that didn't hear your previous episode and haven't come across you just yet, what do you do in the world of comics?
Yeah, so my name is Alan Dunford, and this is my first adventure into comic book making, and I am a writer, if you want to even call me that. I just try to throw words at a page.
Are.
I just throw words at pages until they stick, and I think, I think this kind of formed a coherent story. But I am the co-writer for Pocus Hocus.
Fantastic. And just to give the folks a flavor of what that's all about, go ahead.
Okay, so elevator pitch for Pocus. It is about a magician whose name is Pocus Hocus, who sells his soul to a demon to actually have real magical powers, just to kind of bypass the whole smoke and mirrors process. And years later, he comes to regret the decision, and a debt must also be paid.
Fantastic. Ooh. And the first two issues, yeah. Oh, I'll tell you, man, that's good. The first two issues were fantastic and were very successful, and now you're on the third.
Yeah. We kind of pushed the third out pretty fast, considering I guess the gap between issue one and two, which really wasn't even that big of a gap, but we're all dedicated and working so hard on the Pocus Hocus series, and it's a labor of love at this point. You know, it's a comic book series second, and it's just a project that we love first. So it's one of those things where we're just happy to keep getting it out and cranking it out, because with each passing issue, we're finally able to dig deeper and deeper into the world that we're creating for Pocus.
That's great, man. And now the actual Kickstarter itself launches on the 25th mm-hmm. of January, doesn't it?
Yes.
So for folks listening to this episode as it goes live, if you go to the show notes, then you'll see the link to Pocus Hocus 3 for the pre-launch page, where you can click on the notify me on launch button and follow it in its preparation. And then as soon as it launches on the 25th, people can back it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's right. Something everyone definitely wants to do.
100%.
Yes.
100%. Ooh, do it. Hypnosis.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously we were very happy with the results from issue one to issue two, and it was crazy because with issue one we had it was like 73 backers and we made a little over $2,000, so we were so happy with that, because it was one of those things where we've never set up a, you know, platform like Kickstarter and asked people mm-hmm. to help support our hobby. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right.
So then issue two came out, and we made over 6,000 and had 100 more backers. So we had 172 backers. And that was so humbling and so awesome to see. So we're really hoping to carry that momentum forward going to issue three, because issue three is the one that Will and I have talked about. And it's definitely our favorite of the three that we've written as of right now, because we finally really get to drive a lot of points home and really get to show you know, what we're really made of.
Yeah, that can often be the case, can't it? Like, one's like the jump into the deep end, and then number two can often be the setup.
Right.
And then three is like, where you can like really start to like make the connections and things
And I think that's one of the hard parts when it comes to writing is how do you really want to structure this story? And especially being a nobody, you know, like Will and I are with working comics, how do you safely make a story and tell it linearly without losing an audience three pages into issue one? And we hope that we've done that and at least kept people, you know, interested and intrigued.
Definitely. I mean, the numbers say that, don't they? Yeah. Numbers don't lie. Yeah. that's fantastic. And then, you know, best of luck with Pocus Hocus 3. I'm on the pre-launch page already. So everybody out there, go check it out and just go on the Notify Me for launch. And then you can check it out when it launches on the 25th of January there.
Yeah, and also I want to say one thing too. Sam, congratulations on Band of Warriors number 2.
Thanks, man.
For getting completely funded and crushing it. 173 backers as well on that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I was really pleased with that. It was a real close one, that one. Really happy that we crossed the finish line just in time.
Yeah. And one thing I'll say too, with your launch, that was awesome. Was you did it around the scary time? You did it around the holiday, and you still crushed it.
Yeah, totally, man. I was really worried about that. I'm less worried about issue number 3, which will probably be launching in maybe late March, early April, that sort of thing.
Awesome.
I'm really excited for issue number 3, just in terms of the story that's going to tell. Like, much like yourself, you know, this is where we start to really ramp things up.
Well, and that's awesome too, because I mean, I'm already ready for issue 3, and I haven't even, like, I'm waiting to get my physicals for 1 and 2 before I read it. So I'm already a fan of issue 3, and I have no idea what's happening yet. I'm super
awesome,
excited, man.
Awesome, can't wait to get them all out to you and fully get you on board. So I appreciate that. Awesome, man. Where before we move on to the meat of the podcast, where can people find you online?
Yeah, so people could find me on Twitter, and my user handle is @ChapsOfFury. You can also reach out to Will or myself with any Pocus questions at PocusHocusComic@gmail.com. And of course, you know, that Gmail or that email account is linked to our Kickstarter page. So if you have any questions, just follow along on Kickstarter. And honestly, that's probably the best place to be notified about, you know, when we're going live and any updates. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, for better or worse, we always try to make updates whenever we feel like there's something important to be said. So, you know, like the Pocus 2 campaign page has 21 updates, but that's because we really try to keep our backers and supporters informed every step of the way.
Yeah, exactly, man. No, that's fantastic. And of course, all those links are in the show notes, folks. So go check out Alan and follow him and all that jazz. Last time that we spoke, we left you with a copy of Berserk.
Oh yeah, in my magic
with a
bag.
Chainsaw in your magic bag. With a chainsaw and a sawn-off shotgun in a zombie outbreak.
Yes.
So since then, what have you been reading?
Okay, well, since I've been bunkered up with my chainsaw and my magic bag, you know, just a lot of different stuff. It's funny because whenever you start getting into how do I make my own comic better, you really try to read a lot of stuff that will help you influence that. Yes. And I think I've been kind of doing that a little bit. You know, it was funny because whenever you sent me the email, you're like, so give me 3 to 5 more comics that, you know, you've been reading or whatever. And I was like, oh gosh, I've been reading a lot more than what I thought. So I had to really cut the list down.
Excellent.
But yeah, so the first one that I want to talk about is Censor by Junji Ito.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, tell us more. Let's go with what's it about and what drew you to the series.
So Censor, what it's about is good question, because it's a trip. It takes place with a volcano where a band of monks went inside of it and perished, and the monk's hair formed with this cosmic being inside the volcano, and the volcano spews the hair out and attaches to people. It's wild, and it's awesome, and it is so much fun. So what drew me to it, I'm a big fan of cosmic horror, and that just really checks off all the boxes just for something that you didn't expect, that is just like completely just fun and wild. And they have so many disturbing images in it, but you want to keep going. It's like you're watching a B horror movie, you know. Yeah, it's got that low budget horror movie feel with just some great art and storytelling.
Yeah, man. Of course, Junji Ito just does his best to scare the bejesus out of you.
To put it lightly, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and it's a blast. Like, a lot of the imagery that they use with the strands of hair that are really controlling people and giving them foresight and all this stuff, it's awesome. And it touches on so many themes. And, of course, with all of his stuff, there's at least 7 characters in it that have an existential crisis every 2 pages. So it's always fun to read.
Awesome. And then is that an ongoing series or is that a come to an end? Or
No, it's a come to an end. To my knowledge, I don't think he really has an ongoing series. I think he kind of likes to just tell his story and be done, which is totally respectable. Yep.
Oh, 100%, man. Like, tell your story and then move on to the next thing.
Yep.
He's quite prolific, Junji Ito. He's like a master creator.
it's like he doesn't stop. I get notified, I feel like every 2 months, that he's got a new book coming out or a collection of short stories or something.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Crazy. What came up next for you?
The next thing that came up for me was actually Basket Full of Heads by Joe Hill.
Great.
Yeah. Fantastic. You have a chance to check it out?
I did. Basket Full of Heads, that just, makes you worry straight off the bat.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? Plus it's Joe Hill. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know, it's the son of Stephen King. Mm-hmm. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Oh, definitely not.
And it is horrifying looking at it.
Yeah, so I picked it up not knowing what it was. And, guilty, I picked it up because his name was on it. To sound like I'm fanboying, but I like to read a lot of stuff, that he puts out. And I remember reading the first issue and being like, what did I just read? Like, this is awesome. And the premise is just so silly, but it works.
So yeah, go ahead and give us the premise.
Yeah. A premise. It's about a girl, coming to visit her boyfriend, and these men break in, kill the boyfriend, and she grabs a old, I believe it's like a Norse enchanted axe.
Yeah.
And when she cuts someone's head off, the head will still keep talking once the body even doesn't work anymore. So then a lot of the exposition and everything is told from a decapitated head standpoint, and it's awesome.
It's wild, man.
Yep.
Only the son of Stephen King can come up with that.
I know. So what were your takeaways from it whenever you had a chance to dig into it a little bit?
Oh, no. I mean, I only managed to research it before today, I'm afraid. I haven't managed to read it yet.
Yeah.
I'm fully intending to at least get... Is the first trade?
Oh, yeah, trade's already out. Mm-hmm.
Great. Fantastic. Yeah,
so you can get everything in one setting. And then they have another one out that I haven't checked out yet. I don't know if Joe Hill is attached to it yet, but it's a Refrigerator Full of Heads.
Oh, right, yeah. So, bingo. Oh, well, maybe the next one's Refrigerator Full of Heads.
Yeah. No.
Rather than Basket Full of Heads.
Yeah, so like I said, I haven't had a chance to really check that one out yet, but hopefully it's just as good. Some, it's always the fear of did they let the series go on just a little
second bit. Second album syndrome.
Yeah, the sophomore album syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. But well, fingers crossed. I'm sure it'll be fine. As long as Joe Hill's attached, then I'm sure it's going to be top notch as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, that's fantastic. And then what came up for you next?
So, you know, as I'm hiding from the zombies that are clawing at my window, and yes. I don't want to go outside, and I dig deep into my magic bag of endless wonders and books and manga, I come across a series called The Promised Neverland.
Yeah,
this one,
it looks beautiful.
Yeah,
I haven't read it, but it looks beautiful, and the type of thing that I'd really like to check out.
Yeah, so this was one of those where I actually watched season one of the anime first before I knew anything about it. And I didn't really know anything about it whenever I put on the anime, and I'm watching it and I'm like, this is just probably not my speed. And then a demon appears and I'm like, perfect, we're ready. You know, and then you really find out the dark and sinister plot behind the thing. And I'm like, man, what a left turn. And I am so happy that I stuck around for this, because the series is concluded, and it's turned out to be one of my favorite manga series.
Oh, brilliant. Fantastic. Tell us more.
Yeah, so Promised Neverland, it takes place at a orphanage. And all the children in the orphanage, you know, I don't think they ever really say it, but they have numbers tattooed on the side of their neck. And it doesn't really say why the numbers are there or whatever. And then they're always being tested, you know, physically, mentally, all this stuff. And then every now and then kids will get adopted and they go away. But you find out the kids aren't actually being adopted. They're being handed over to demons so the demons can eat their brains.
Right.
Yep.
just throw it.
Yeah,
it
just there. Yeah, there anyway. It is. And it's such a wild premise, but I love the writing in it, because you find out quickly that it's not an orphanage, it's actually more of a factory.
Right.
That is just kind of just getting children in and making them smart, because apparently the smarter the child is, the better the brain tastes. And it's just like, ugh, you know, it makes your skin crawl. And then the series after issue, it's like five or six, you know, it's just about the children trying to escape and cope with life. And it's just so well done. You know, it really has turned out just to be such a crazy series with a lot of heart in it. And just perseverance of the human spirit.
That's awesome, man. Mm-hmm. So this is definitely something that I want to check out. I've always been a fan of anime and manga ever since I first watched Princess Mononoke.
Oh yeah, and, so Studio Ghibli, right?
Yeah,
they are just incredible, and that's what really I think solidified my love for a lot of that stuff and how much of an art form it is.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%. It's absolutely amazing. And I love just trying to get in the head of the creator as well.
Yeah.
Like, how on earth did they come up with this? There you go. Bingo. Yeah. It's absolutely incredible, some of the stories and the visuals that they come up with.
Yeah.
It's just like, how on earth did they...
Yeah, we talked about this with my episode I was on before, how much of an influence Death Note was for me in the writing with Pocus, and not really realizing that until we kind of talked about it, and then we had one of those come to realization meetings, you know, where I was like, I guess I borrowed a lot of elements from that.
Right.
Yeah, whether you realize it or not in the time of writing, you know,
it's
always there and it always kind of sticks with you.
Totally, man. Mm-hmm. Totally. And then what else?
Two more. So two more. The next one, and this one is Shameless, and I don't care what anyone says. Dragon Ball Super
has been
so much fun and just a blast all around to read. And I'm just a sucker for anything Dragon Ball related. And I have absolutely loved the direction that Super has gone and how it has still kept me engaged even after all of these years. You know, I'm checking my Shonen Jump app every time the 20th comes around, because every month on the 20th, there's a new chapter of Dragon Ball Super that comes out. So
really?
Yeah, I'm in it.
In it to win it. 100%.
Oh, yeah, always have been, man. Have you read anything Dragon Ball, watched the anime, anything like that?
No. That's the one thing that's really kind of just flown by right by me.
Yeah, funny because I feel like Dragon Ball is kind of like that that vanilla anime for a lot of people, where if they don't even really like anime, they all know Dragon Ball and they like that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one. If you ever have friends and you want to introduce them to anime or anything, you just show them Dragon Ball because it's safe. You know, just the story of, you know, someone that wants to be the world's greatest fighter, and there's always a new challenger that just happens to be a little bit stronger. And I know that's a tale as old as time itself, but you know, and they recycle it a lot, but it is just so much fun every time. Yeah. Just because I want to see, like, well, what crazy thing can they come up with now to explain how he's stronger now than he was, you know, 7 books ago.
Totally. It's kind of the, I mean, I haven't fully read One Punch Man. The first volume was really kind of like that, and of course it's taking the mic out of the actual genre itself. It's all good fun. And just trying to outdo itself every single time.
Definitely. And that's one thing that you find, I mean, you know, Dragon Ball's a little bit more blatant about it, and they're, you know, so what with it, but really, that even with all of our superhero comics that we read, that's kind of always, you know, that's the struggle of the hero, right? How does he keep facing the new challenges, and how does he, you know, learn how to best those challenges?
Exactly, man. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you've got a captivated audience with that, and they clearly have with Dragon Ball, and everything that comes with it, it's just, it's magic. It's great.
Yeah. I think Dragon Ball 2, it's one of those, you know, a hope, a wish, and a dream, right? Because you see the popularity that something like this has gained, and you really hope that one day you'll be watching the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and then you see a giant Pocus floaty just go by.
Yeah, you know? Man. Yeah,
and you're
like,
that's me. I did it.
Yeah, totally. I made it.
Yeah, I made it.
No, totally. Because it is rather inspiring when you see like a franchise of some kind that's really kind of, or a property rather, that's really kind of made it.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, you just got to look at, you know, similar things like Pokemon and things like that. And, that's just, you know, it's part of the furniture now. Really.
Oh yeah.
It's like, you know, that's not going anywhere anytime soon. It's just getting more popular, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
Wild, totally wild. Coming on to your last recent read.
Yep. So this one is actually a trilogy, a novel trilogy. Sam, so it's weird because I was talking to my letter about this, and I think we made the joke before on the first episode, but you know, he was kind of asking what I was reading and what some of my influences were for issue 2 and issue 3. And I told him about a novel, and he was like, what's a novel? You know, making the joke, because everyone's just so engrossed in comics in this medium, you know?
Yeah.
So I've been reading the book. Oh, I read, it's only took me like a week or two to read all 3 books, but.
Oh, really?
I couldn't put it down. It was the Book of the Ancestor trilogy by Mark Lawrence. And it is the premise for it is just so cool. It's just about a convent of assassin nuns.
Awesome. Sold.
It's a blast because it really captures a lot of elements of, you know, from not even so much rags to riches, but rags to perseverance. And I love that kind of story about someone that always wants to, you know, climb up from their upbringing, troubled upbringing, I should say. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool because the Book of the Ancestor deals a lot with, I guess, so much spirituality. And they have this thing in it called the path, which is a way that you kind of leave your mortal body and your spirit is able to journey with the ancestors to gain new knowledge and gain new powers and stuff. and it is just so much fun to read, and it is it's a journey, like 100%, and it doesn't take the normal trope of the chosen one type deal it kind of leads you to believe in the first book. And it kind of turns that a little bit, which that was really nice to see, because, you know, I'm reading the first book and I think I have it figured out. I'm like, oh, okay, so this person's the chosen one. And then it's not. Okay. So then I'm like, okay, great. I'm ready. Let's go. Let's keep going.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And no, to completely subvert that and just completely switch things up. Mm-hmm. No, that's fantastic. And then it's three books.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's I think it's Red Sister, Gray Sister, and then Holy Sister. Hopefully I didn't butcher that, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. And yeah like I said, I really could not put them down. I can't recommend that enough. And Mark Lawrence actually has a new trilogy that takes place in the same realm as this one.
Right.
So yeah, I'm going to be picking that up here soon.
That's really good. And they're not small books. They're like 500 pages by the looks of it.
I know. I lost a lot of sleep.
You really went for it, man.
Yeah, and I discovered it at the worst time too. I actually just graduated with my master's degree at the beginning of December.
Congratulations.
Hey, thank you so much. Yeah, I have my master's degree in health promotion. So fantastic. Yeah, but I discovered those obviously while I was in college and working on my graduate degree, and I put a lot of homework on the back burner and a lot of textbook reading that I should have been doing for those books.
You still passed, so yeah.
I did it. But if I could have written a thesis paper on the Book of the Ancestor trilogy, that would have been way easier than all the fields of research I had to do for that.
Oh man, alive. Yeah. Oh, that's cool though, man. I'm more of a audiobook guy. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so no, I was agreeing with you. Definitely. Audible has been such a fantastic discovery for myself. Where I travel for work, you know, as we were talking about it in the pre-show, I work in the home health field, so I'm always on the go and always traveling. So audiobooks have really helped me be able to read as well for the stuff that I don't have time to sit down and read.
Totally. Yeah, no, it's massively helpful. And in a lot of ways, I actually absorb the information better when it's spoken to me for some reason.
Oh, definitely.
Particularly like with all the different voices that the voiceover artist is using, and even the occasional sound effect helps me.
I will say this though, nothing can ruin a good audiobook more than a bad narrator.
Oh no, yeah, that's everything. If the narrator is bad, you might as well just not. You know, they have to be a good narrator. They have to be just a good overall voiceover.
Oh, definitely. And it's just, it's funny, you know, actually talking this stuff out loud with you after I gave you, you know, my five, and, you know, really thinking about them and how much they've influenced my writing. What was some of the stuff that influenced you for Band of Warriors?
Yeah, so for Band of Warriors, it was really, it was a whole mix of things. So the actual story itself came from visits to both where my mum has a house on Crete. And it's relatively close to where Knossos actually is, which is the city where King Minos originates.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And they think that that's basically Knossos was probably the labyrinth.
Okay.
That was the story of the labyrinth. And so in actual fact, Minos means king in ancient Greek.
So was he just like king?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no. So they think that the actual, like, the king must have actually had a name, but in the telling of it, they just use Minos.
Okay.
And then, like, the Western, like, the English translation that ended up coming to be, it ended up just being King Minos, and so it actually means King King.
Okay.
Which, yeah, it obviously right there, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but I think right there would be a good time to put a bumper in right here that just says, "The more you know," and have like,
yeah, exactly. That's it. Yeah. Ding.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, obviously, I would want to support you anyway. But then, whenever I was reading the about for it, and that it had references of was it Greek and Celtic mythology, I was already sold. Right there, because you know, I'm a huge sucker for that stuff anyway, and the fact that you're actually drawing inspiration from real life experiences with this too, that's awesome, man.
Oh yeah, no, totally. What's really interesting, so my wife's from Brittany in northern France, right? There's back in the day, 1500 BC, in the bronze
before any of us were born.
Yeah, a lot longer before any of us were born. They had a lot of tin mines in northern France and also in southern England as well, because there's a massive tin deposit just like in that bit of the world. There's some in Afghanistan as well. But the reason that tin is important because it's one of the components for making bronze.
Okay.
So it's tin and copper that you mix together. And so obviously that was very valuable at the time because everybody was making everything out of bronze in terms of swords and shields and armor and things like that. And so they actually had a trading relationship from southern England and northern France to Greece, and even to Egypt and things like that. And so there is actually a connection, like a trade relationship at least. Reading up on more of the history and the archaeology and things like that, I just started to try and form a story in my head, and that's where Band of Warriors came in. I thought, you know, why not mix actual history with Celtic and Greek mythology and put in a boatload of action as well.
Yeah, so I'm very frustrated with myself for asking you these questions now, because I'm mad at you because you've done so much research and put so much thought into it, and you ask me, Alan, tell me about Pocus. Well, I just read this one horror novel and I thought it'd be cool, you know. Yeah, not I'm like, Sam, get out of here, man. I'm over this.
Oh no, not at all, man. I mean, every story's got its own story, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes we go overboard with our research, and I probably need to do half of it. But
yeah, it's awesome to hear you talk about that. Yeah, it really dig into it, because like I said, I'm so excited. I read the premise for it, and I really, like I said, I'm holding out until I get my physicals in, because as much as I want people to read the PDFs as soon as we put them out, I'm guilty of the same thing, because I just love having that physical book, because I feel like I absorb it more, and I like it, you know.
Me too, man. Yep. Me too. Yeah, no, whenever I've bought a physical, particularly off of Kickstarter, then I will definitely wait until the physical arrives, and then I can properly sit down and absorb it and experience it as it's meant to. That's fantastic. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, Alan, and you're always welcome back. I'm really excited to see you hit over double again. So you're heading for 400 backers this time, right?
Yeah. Oh man.
For Pocus Hocus 3.
Yeah. Listen, as much as I want to do that, like, just the idea of even us hitting triple digits for issue two was was just completely far-fetched. We never thought it'd happen. It's cool to see the reception and all the positivity and all the fantastic feedback that we've gotten back from Pocus. And it really drives us to keep wanting to put out just that much more content, and it makes us work harder. You know, it's the opposite, I feel like, from what certain people think. You know, some people may think if you give people too much praise, then they think that there's nowhere else for them to go and they can play it safe. But really, when we see all the praise, we don't want people to get bored, and we don't want people to expect certain things from us. We want to deliver more than their expectation and go above their praise. So that's been a huge driving factor for us, is just be the best that we can be in this team.
That's awesome, man. That's good to hear. And I'm kind of in the same same boat and the same kind of mindset, yeah. where like the more praise I hear, the more that I think I have to put in more research and more thinking time about the actual yeah. story so that it blows people away.
I don't think you need to put too much more research in. I think you're okay.
Yeah, for Band of Warriors, I'm definitely good. I've done my copious amounts, but I've got a couple of other projects on the go at the moment that are going to require a fair amount of research. Just to ensure that it works.
Awesome. Well, I'm a fan of yours, so I cannot wait to see what else you have coming out.
Thanks, Alan. Appreciate that, man. And ditto. Because I'm sure you said this on the last pod, but how many issues do you have planned?
Okay, Poker? So you know, whenever you flip open the book or open the PDF, it says a new play in six acts. Realistically, that's just the first arc.
Right.
And the first arc is just really setting up the framework and the groundwork for really where we want to go. And it's just, as of right now, I think we have POCUS planned for 12. But whenever we first started POCUS, we only had it planned for six. And we just keep falling more and more in love with the characters and the story. And you know, I think, you know, you can agree to, as long as people want to keep reading POCUS, we're going to keep writing it.
So, awesome, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Keen as mustard, Alan. Yeah. Nope. That's brilliant.
Awesome.
But man, no, always a pleasure, never a chore. And you're always welcome back. So everyone go check out POCUS Hocus 3 by clicking the link in the show notes. And Alan, take care of yourself and keep on promoting health.
Yeah, oh, I'll promote the hell out of it, Sam. And we'll talk to you soon and see you back for issue 4.
100%, man. Yep. Thanks, Alan. Bye. Thanks again to Alan for being on Comics for the Apocalypse. It was an absolute pleasure. If you enjoyed the show today, please leave a review for us on iTunes or whichever podcast service you use, as not only will it let me know that you liked it, but I believe that it helps make other people aware of the show as well. If you'd like to check out Alan's work or follow him on social media, those links are in the show notes, along with all our own links to the various areas of the internet. Speaking of which, if you haven't already, be sure to visit Comic Scene's website at comicscene.org for comic news, the comic club, and lots of other fun sequential art stuff. And finally, as long as the apocalypse doesn't come to pass in the next week, I'll see you next Monday. Bye for now.